You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Buckeye talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
What if Graham Mertz isn't good? Welcome back to Buckeye Talk. It's Doug Lamorese, Nathan Baird, and Stephen Means. Ohio State, 52-21 over Wisconsin. We are going to start on the defensive side of the ball for Ohio State, but then when we talk about the Ohio State offense, I think it's possible we saw something that was about as successful as we have seen it in the Ryan Day era. Nathan, when we talked about this on the pregame show, the headline I wound up putting on the pregame show was Ohio State, Wisconsin is Jim Knowles versus Graham Mertz. Ohio State was down three of its top four cornerbacks. You thought, all right, maybe they'll be able to attack Ohio State a little bit. Wisconsin gained how many yards? 296 total yards, 5.3 yards per play, and that was greatly aided by a 75-yard Braylon Allen run against second stringers late in the game. How did you think Jim Knowles and this Ohio State defense fared against what Wisconsin tried to say was an attack?
I think you'd have to give them, strong marks for what they did in this game. Now, I think talking to Tommy Eichenberg after the game, I was kind of bringing up this same concept because Ohio State broke a trend tonight. If you remember, Notre Dame goes down and drives on its drives for field goal on the first possession of that game. Arkansas State did nothing on its first possession. Ohio State goes up 7-0. Arkansas State goes down and kicks a field goal. And then Ohio State scores first. Toledo goes right down and scores. So tonight, this defense made its impact early. You get the Ohio State scores opening drive. Tanner McAllister gets the interception. He turned that into a touchdown. They shut Wisconsin down again. They turned that into a touchdown. So all of a sudden, it's 21-0. And reminiscent of a little bit of the Michigan State game last year, now you've got a team that is sort of taken out of its comfort zone and what it wants to do offensively, taken out of its game plan, and put in a position that was favorable for Ohio State. I was a little bit surprised still that Wisconsin didn't come after those corners more than they did. I know that your bread and butter is Braylon Allen, and I think they have more confidence in him at the end of the day than they do Graham Mertz for good reason, but you're down your two starting tackles too. Like, I don't understand why they didn't just attack those corners a little bit more than they did. But also, I don't know what was really there for them once they're down 21-0.
Obviously, the Graham Mertz pick on the Wisconsin's first drive, Stephen, thrown behind his receiver, Tanner McAllister, makes a really nice center with his hands, just reaches out and snags the ball. Really nice interception. Sets up Ohio State on a short field to go up 14-0 after Ohio State has scored on its first drive. Why didn't they maybe try to go after J.K. Johnson and Jair Brown again with Denzel Burke out, came out with a club on his hand after we did all that discussion after he wasn't at practice on Wednesday? And then it was like, no, it's good we had that discussion because I think people who listened to this podcast were on alert for maybe something going on with Denzel Burke. Had a club on his hand, no Cam Brown,
no Jordan Hancock. They were both out on the availability report. That means J.K. Johnson, who coming into the season, we would have called the fourth corner, I think, because we would have called Jordan Hancock third. And then all they have left, the only other two scholarship guys in the cornerback room are Jair Brown and Ryan Turner, two true freshmen. So Stephen, they start corner four and corner five. Ryan Day said they played with no fear. So I have to go back and look at the film and stuff, but it didn't matter, Stephen. Like, it didn't. The fact that Ohio State didn't have its three top cornerbacks, as it turned out, really had no effect on this game.
That's because Wisconsin didn't really try them the way that you would expect teams to try, especially Jair Brown, because at least J.K. had some film of meaningful snaps on the table, just because this has been a thing all season at this point, that Jordan Hancock hasn't played. Cameron Brown, he missed basically the entire second half of the Toledo game. Denzel Burke got benched at one point. So, like, J.K.'s worked in there some, so maybe you have a little bit of respect for him. But Jair had played no meaningful snaps until today. Now he's a starting corner, and yet, even from, you know, somebody asked Tanner McAllister, like, are you surprised that, like, those corners didn't get tried more? Like, by the way, he's answering that question. He was a little thrown off a little bit that those two guys didn't get tried more than they did. But in the passing game, whether it was in the passing game or maybe even running Braylon Allen directly at these corners, that just wasn't on the table for Wisconsin, which is the most confusing thing in the world, because the corners have already been the weak link of the defense. And then, like, you made it even weaker by taking the two experienced guys off the field.
But Doug, you pointed that out to our texters, and that before the game, that we'd seen this before. We saw the start of last season when Ohio State was putting Denzel Burke and Ryan Watts and Legend Cavazos on the field in really unadvantageous situations. Like, two of those guys were obviously in over their head, and it looked like it as far as the way Minnesota and then especially Oregon could run the ball against Ohio State. And we were a little bit on alert for that. We were a little bit, our antenna were up at the start of this game that maybe that was where Ohio State was going to get burned by Wisconsin. And the rest of this defense, I thought, pretty effectively choked that off.
You didn't see them attacking the edge in the run game the way Oregon did it last year. You know, that was where I thought. And again, maybe Braylon Allen bounce went out. It didn't feel like they ran wide very much at all. And they were down. Wisconsin was down its two starting tackles. One guy had started at right tackle in week one and has been hurt since then. And then the left tackle was hurt. So then the guy who had been playing right tackle had to move to left tackle. So again, they're not at full strength in their offensive line. And as we talked before the game, their offensive line this year maybe isn't as good as many years. I sometimes wonder if people, you can hear, can you guys ever hear aggravation in my voice? Does that ever happen on this podcast? You think, like, you hear just something? I wonder if Doug's aggravated.
Never hear
a bowl of sunshine.
No? Okay, I know. So I get aggravated at the opponents of Ohio State. And it's not because I want them to win or don't want them to win or whatever. But what I want teams to do when you are coming in to Ohio Stadium with a talent deficit, which is basically almost everyone that comes into Ohio Stadium, I want you to have a plan that is a plan that isn't the exact same thing you always do. And then I want you to shoot your shot. Why are you here? Why come? And Wisconsin, with the new offensive coordinator and Bobby Engram, with a good running back and a quarterback that I thought when he was comfortable had made some throws in the first 3 weeks, it felt like they just slammed Braylon Allen into the middle of the line against Mike Hall and Tommy Eichenberg and JT Tuimoloau and everybody else. And Graham Mertz, they didn't do anything to him. Like, he wasn't comfortable most of the time. I don't know if they max protected very much, but they didn't. When he was on the move, he was bouncing throws. He got happy feet a lot. He played terrible. He was 11 of 20 for 94 yards. And Nathan, I think a lot of that is Ohio State. But I thought Wisconsin's plan was terrible. And if people thought I was drooling over Daquan Finn and Toledo last week, that's why. Because Daquan Finn at least took his shot. He at least was, all right, Ohio State's going to do this to me, I'm going to bring it back. Graham Mertz, when he got out of the pocket and ran, he slid after 3 yards. He was no threat in the run game. He couldn't throw on the move at all. And Wisconsin never really did anything to threaten the Ohio State defense. So, like, I'm aggravated with, like, take a better shot, Wisconsin, or just stay home. Or, Nathan, Is this just Jim Knowles, that defensive line, Tanner McAllister, Ronnie Hickman, Steel Chambers, Tommy Eichenberg? They just took care of business and there was nothing Wisconsin could do.
I think the answer is somewhere in the middle there. I mean, obviously, I had been pointing out pretty adamantly all week what I thought of Graham Mertz. I mean, you can – King of the Noodle Arms is still slinging linguine back there. Like, he could be the best one of them, but, like, you're still just a noodle arm. And I said it on the text this afternoon. Like, he's a noodle arm until he proves otherwise in Ohio Stadium. And he that's what
not
he
close.
Is.
That's what he is.
That's just – that's the ceiling, and it's why Wisconsin's going to be a 4 or 5 loss team probably once you factor in a bowl game at the end of this year. They're just not special offensively. But I will say this. So first drive, Ohio State's up 7-0. First drive for Wisconsin, Braylon Allen, first down. They run with the other guy, get 0 yards, and then 2nd and 10, Graham Mertz goes back to pass, stares down his – quadrant of the field and then throws a ball that his receiver had no idea it was supposed to be there. Don't know who that was on, but the receiver, it's not like he threw it before the break and the guy was just going to turn and meet it. Like, he threw it in a, like, behind the guy. Like, it was, they clearly were not on the same page. The only person who could have caught it was Tanner McAllister. And then a couple seconds later, it's 14-0, and pretty quickly it's off to the races from there. Like, once you're down 14-0 to Ohio State, and you know that you've only got Graham Mertz at quarterback, I think the urgency ramps up so much for Wisconsin that now they're playing against a second opponent.
Bobby Engram did not call a game that suggested Wisconsin came here to win today. And I think that's what Doug's getting at. When you say take your shot, every other team, even Notre Dame, all three of the previous opponents came in here and had a moment where it's like, well, that was interesting, and that got Ohio State on its heels a little bit. I don't know what did that for Wisconsin today. Maybe it's when they went Wildcat, but the game was over by then. But by the time they went Wildcat with Braylon Allen and started doing a lot of that stuff, I don't remember a play just offhand right now that early in the game was like, this is our, we're taking our shot at you. And
yeah,
you played kind of scared.
I wonder how much. Yeah, I wonder how much of that is just a pride thing. Like, Wisconsin has its identity. It has been the best team, best program in the West for a while based on that identity. And it feels like they should be able to come in and, like, win with their identity or whatever. But I'm with you, Doug. And we overthought it coming in, thinking that that's what they would do, that they would maybe come in and see, you know, play with the element of surprise a little bit. And that was before we knew they were going to be down Burke and Brown. We thought even with Burke and Brown available, Wisconsin would probably come in and attack Ohio State's corners, because that had been the weakest point of the defense to this point. And I'm still surprised that they didn't do more. And I think you've got to come in with something. You've got to come in with a little bit of something that Ohio State has not yet seen on film.
And it's not, like, again, it's not trick plays. We're not asking for flea flickers. But why not even, did they throw any bubble screens? And do one of those where it's like, I got two receivers out there. We're going to go throw quick to the receiver, have the other receiver make one block on one of these young corners and try to spring somebody. Right. I didn't feel like they ran wide. They didn't run.
They had one play like that where it wasn't a bubble screen, but one play where it was clear that they were attacking a corner with a blocker, and it worked. It just ended up being a hold at the same time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They did have that hold that hurt them. So, I don't know. I just, whatever, Wisconsin, congratulations on having an identity. It didn't work at all. It didn't come close to working. But I do think, I didn't know if Jim Knowles, okay, well, you know, we never seen a team like this, Jim Knowles, and they were ready for it. Again, the pick right off the bat just changes the whole complexion of the game. A lot of credit for Tanner McAllister, Nathan. A lot of times throws like that, it's a terrible throw. It's 3 yards behind his receiver, but it was still in a tough spot, like where the ball's kind of on Tanner McAllister. He made a really nice catch on it. So I know you talked to Tim. He played very well. Tommy Eichenberg had 14 tackles, including 2 tackles for loss. He's all over the place. Ohio State only had 1 sack. It was a Jack Sawyer sack early. But Nathan, I did think they made Graham Mertz uncomfortable the whole game. And I don't know what the pressures will be, what the hurries will be, but they didn't let him sit there and rip throws. And once he had to be on the move a little bit or try to throw on the run, that's when he was throwing ground balls to his receivers. So I did think, I don't want this to only be bad play calling, bad quarterback play by Wisconsin. The Ohio State defense came in and absolutely did what it had to do, and I thought played very well.
Yeah, I mean, one sack on 21 pass attempts, that's really not that bad of a ratio. You know what I mean? Like, the Wisconsin didn't throw it that much. Again, in a game that they lost by 31 points, they weren't trying to throw the ball much. So I don't know. Whatever. And by the way, increasingly, the Wisconsin identity is becoming, they are no longer the power in the West. This is trending towards being the third year in a row where they're not going to play in a Big Ten championship game. But I digress. I thought Tanner McAllister was – this was his best game for Ohio State so far. That interception was big. He had a couple of the big hits in this game. I don't know how bad that tight end is hurt, but like the top tight end, Cundiff, for Wisconsin, but that was Tanner McAllister's tackle. And I'm not saying he was like trying to hurt him, but like,
yeah,
that was
had a foot, had his foot in a boot afterward. Yeah.
That was a really physical moment of attack that he played. And then right after that comes back and gets like that diving pass deflection at the end zone when Wisconsin's trying to hit a home run there. Like, that was huge to have stability from the safety group playing like over the top of these young, inexperienced, somewhat exposed corners was massive. I mean, Ryan Day was pointing out how he had gone over and said something to Ronnie Hickman about that they needed to go out there and lead those guys. And I think that was happening verbally, but it was also happening with the way that those guys played. That safety group that was such a catastrophe at times in the last couple of years and the problems they've had at the back end of this defense, like tonight showed how that has really come full circle. And that's an incredibly dependable sort of backbone at the back of what Jim Knowles is doing.
He's been a quality addition to the safety room. You know, his impact on the safety room is almost similar to what Jonah Jackson's impact was on the offensive line room in 2019.
That's a ridiculous statement. We're not even going
to
dignify
that. It's literally
it's solidifying, right? Like it's, yeah. But then guess what? He made a couple plays tonight. Made a nice pick, yeah. Made a play on a ball in the air, right? But I mean, like, I do think that was a valuable point, and the way Ryan Day explained it, of we got young corners, and I told our safeties, make sure you have their back. And they did.
Yeah.
And that's how it should work in a situation like that.
This is the epitome of what they mean when they say safety-driven defense. And it got, now I got tested to its greatest limits because you're playing young cornerbacks. But the idea of the safety-driven defense is that Jim Knowles is going to attack with everybody else in the front seven consistently. And even the corners at times. I mean, his first play as defensive coordinator here, he sent Denzel Burke on a cornerback blitz. That's kind of crazy. But everybody else is in attack mode. So your safeties have to be erasers. And instead of it being like the single high safety where it's like, oh, Jordan Fuller is your only eraser, so he has to cover all this ground. You've got three of those guys out there now. While everybody else is basically – attacking a ball carrier, it's their job to make sure that, because sometimes when you attack, you miss. And their job is to make sure that instead of it being a 65-yard touchdown, it's a 7-yard game. And today, more than ever, that was needed just because of what you had at corner. And Tanner McAllister, Ronnie Hickman, and Josh Proctor really stepped up.
And Rob Oller from the Dispatch asked Ryan Day about this. I think Jair Brown got called for a hold or something. I didn't even notice it, but I guess Ryan Day was jumping on the ref about it. And he was saying, like, why are you doing that? Is it because you're mad at the call? You're trying to show a young guy you have his back. And Ryan Day said, well, it's both, but I do want to show that. I thought that was – it was the right combination, Nathan, of these corners. They said, like, Ryan Day said they played with no fear. So don't be scared and try to do what you're supposed to do. Right. Like that was the trouble last year against Oregon, was the corners didn't like fulfill the basic fundamental assignments on plays. Well, in this play, when they block this guy like this, now this becomes your responsibility, and they didn't live up to those responsibilities. Mm-hmm. But just don't be scared and do your job, and we'll have your back. Whether that's Ryan Day, whether that's Jim Knowles, whether that's Perry Eliano and Tim Walton, especially Tim Walton as the corners coach, or whether that's Hickman, McAllister, and Proctor. And that's a nice thing, Nathan, that it felt like those guys weren't scared, and then everybody around them rallied. And the result is they played their fourth and fifth corner the whole game. We thought maybe Cam Martinez would have to work in an outside corner. I don't know. I didn't see him, right? They just played their fourth and fifth corner the whole game, and it didn't matter. And that's quite a thing.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of a chicken before the egg situation that plays in here. But like with Brown, I thought that that pass interference call was sort of touchy. Yeah. Like I kind of saw why it got called, but whatever. But then later he has another borderline play where the officials gave him the benefit of the doubt and he got in and broke up a pass. And it, I want to give those guys credit for just showing up and playing as solidly as they did, but Brown and Johnson on the edge. I mean, I don't think that's an easy thing to do, but I also think that last year, if they're having to put their fourth and fifth cornerbacks on the field, it was a disaster, not just because their fourth and fifth cornerbacks weren't ready, but because the whole defense had less structural integrity. This year, even if that was sort of a weak point, maybe there was a limit to how much Wisconsin really could attack those guys, because really every other spot on the defense now, aren't you pretty confident that those other nine guys are doing their job in a much more than you were a year ago at this time with this defense?
Yeah, even if they're not playing at an All-American or All-Big Ten level, I think you think they're doing their job.
It's stability. It's just kind of a basic stability that this defense has now, that they're not really out there doing like amazing things, but Jim Knowles has been kind of telling us that the whole time, that when he talks about even like tackling drills, they do a lot of tackling drills that don't involve tackling. It's, are you in the right spot? Like, just be in the right spot. If you're in the right spot, you've almost done something positive, even if you miss the tackle, because if you've at least like made the ball carrier do a thing maybe you didn't want him to do. And now if that next guy is in the right spot, he's going to make the tackle. It's just those, that kind of those layers of stability that they're working with now that were not there a year ago.
And we did not get Jim Knowles after the game today. We only got Ryan Day, but Ryan Day, especially talk about Braylon Allen, again, who's a big 6'2" back, said he thought they gang tackled, right? And maybe even if you thought he was maybe going to squirt out of the first couple tackles, there was always, he said, like an extra guy at the party, Steven, that they didn't, again, until he did it against the backups. And Ryan Day said, Ryan Day wanted to put the backup defensive guys in the game at that point, and Jim Knowles didn't want to. And Ryan Day overruled the head coach of the defense and put in the backups, and Braylon Allen immediately ripped off a 75-yard touchdown. Yeah. And I can just imagine Jim Knowles is in the, probably like, oh, head coach of the defense. Fine. Head coach of the defense. They won't even listen to me. You take over my side of the ball. I can't believe it. So I'm sure Jim Knowles is mad, and Ryan Day is going to have to buy him a cigar or a piece of sushi. But that idea, that's important, Stephen, right? That, again, if you have enough guys doing their job in the right spot, even if it takes five guys to bring down Braylon Allen, well, I think Ohio State felt like they had the five guys there almost every time.
90 yards on 22 carries when you take out that 75-yard run, and it's the backups and us, basically. Yeah, they did that. Knowles talked about that on Tuesday when we got him, the idea of how you take down a bigger back like that. It's got to be everybody. It's not going to be on one person, because if it's one person, he's bouncing off of that. They did gang tackle, even if – I did not realize Tommy Eichenberg had 14 tackles until you said that. That's, I don't even know where to begin with. That's pretty impressive. But they did exactly what the game plan was against another Wisconsin running back, and that's gang tackle. And that's why it was 4.1 yards per carry for him before that. So job well done.
But I also will say, to wrap up the Ohio State defensive portion of this, last year, when Ohio State had a clear deficiency on defense, Joe Moorhead, the Oregon offensive coordinator, attacked the deficiency until it cracked.
And attacked it some more.
It didn't feel like Wisconsin did that. No. So now the deficiencies weren't as deficient, and Ohio State was there with the what's it called? Gawk? Sock? What's the stuff? Cock.
Gawk.
K-A-U-L-K.
I don't even know what you're trying to get at right now.
Gawk? Why did I call it Gawk?
I don't know what you're trying to get at. So.
Cock. They were there with the cock more quickly, right? Cock, says it. Ah, cock. And they brought the cock, C-A-U-L-K, more quickly than they did a year ago. So yes, Nathan, it wasn't as deficient and they were quicker to patch it. But also, I don't think Wisconsin tried it as much as Oregon did. And maybe if they would have tried a little bit harder and a little more effectively, maybe Wisconsin would have been a little more effective offensively. Not that they would have won the game, though.
Yeah, I think they might have been able to not get buried quite as quickly as they did, to where it's 21-0 and 28-0. Like, But last year, I think it's fair to say right now that the deficiencies were so much more widespread than just those corners. This defensive line is better than last year's defensive line. I think the tackles are playing better than last year's tackles played. The linebackers are clearly better than what you saw on the field for Ohio State last year. And especially once Josh Proctor got hurt last year, the safety play has been elevated from what you had last year, including even the slot corner in that mix, or cover safety, whatever they're calling it last year. So it's both. I think you're right that there was a missed opportunity here for Wisconsin. And I think that I don't know how long that regime is going to stay in place if the wheels keep spinning this way for Wisconsin. But I think we also saw evidence of how much better this defense is top to bottom showing up tonight.
All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to start talking about the Ohio State offense next on Buckeye Talk. All right, I want to talk offense, but I want to save C.J. Stroud for the third part of the podcast. So let's talk about play calling. Let's talk about the running backs. Let's talk about the offensive line. Let's talk about Cade Stover. Let's talk about the receivers. Steven, Jackson Smith and Jigba has played a handful of
snaps.
38 snaps. And it certainly didn't matter tonight. So we're mostly dealing with tonight's game. We had kind of maybe thought, all right, well, it's Wisconsin. Hey, you get hurt against Notre Dame. You don't really do much against Arkansas State and Toledo. But like, hey, now it's Wisconsin. And then it's like, no, he's out. So Ryan Day said they just wanted to give him another week. They hope to have him back Tuesday at practice to get him ready to go for Rutgers next week. But the thing that we did see, Steven, which we kind of didn't see before, right, as much, because when Jackson was out, then Julian Fleming's also, you just put Emeka in the slot. So it's Julian at X, or Marvin at X, Julian at Z, Emeka in the slot. And now you're just, it's just Emeka for Jackson. And yeah. Emeka Egbuka is not as good as Jackson Smith and Jigba right this second, but it's not slowing down the passing game. It's hard to say, Stephen, but like, we would be fair to say we kind of didn't notice that Ohio State's best offensive skill player wasn't there tonight. Kind of didn't matter.
We could say Emeka Egbuka isn't as good as Josh Smith and Jigba is right now. He had 6 catches for 118 yards and 2 touchdowns, and he was playmaking in the slot. But I mean, I think there might be a case that he's as good as what Jackson Smith and Jigba was at this point in his career last year, that they might be the same player. I don't know. 5-star recruit, number one wide receiver in his class, is starting to pop. That makes sense to me. I think, to be quite honest with you, the only person who missed Jackson Smith and Jigba this week, just from a statistical standpoint, was probably Marvin Harrison, because without Jackson Smith and Jigba, he was the one getting doubled all night with the safety over the top, which is why he only had 3 catches for 40.
You're just mad because he didn't catch a touchdown pass.
That too. Yes, of course. But more, but it's like someone's got to get doubled. And if Marvin has clearly proven himself to be their second best weapon in the wide receiving core, maybe their best. I mean, I saw some like NFL scouts after last week saying he's wide receiver 1 for the 2024 NFL draft, which is way out there. But it's like, that's now the best weapon from the receiving core. So you double him all night, which opened up Emeka Egbuka, which opened up Julian Fleming, who continues to start looking like the dude who was once the number one receiver in the country in 2020. So everybody else gets to eat while Marvin is now the guy who is taking attention for everything. But other than that, yeah, this passing game moved as normal.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I guess what should be expected, but it was also is also still a little bit crazy to say. Emeka Egbuka 6 for 118. 2 touchdowns, Julian Fleming 4 for 67, 1 touchdown, Cade Stover at tight end 4 for 51, 2 touchdowns, Marvin Harrison Jr. 3 for 45 overall. Those are the only 4 guys who caught passes, 17 receptions for 281 yards and 5 touchdowns. Nathan, I think the offensive line played really well. It felt like they were shoving the line of scrimmage back 3 yards. And the thing that I was particularly interested in was the way Ohio State spread Wisconsin out. They had Cade Stover out in the slot a lot, spread him out, and then ran the ball. And it wasn't like Wisconsin likes to – now I'm back on Wisconsin's predictable play calling. It's like, hey, you know how we run the ball? Let's get 7 tight ends in the game and put everybody within 4 inches of each other and see if we can slam ahead for 3 yards. Ohio State spread everything out, opened up gaps, guys won one-on-one battles on the offensive line. And then there were gigantic holes, but that line like got after it, I thought again, Nathan, which is not a surprise, but it's rounding into form pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, Wisconsin's not quite 3 yards in a cloud of dust. I think Braylon Allen and Trevion Henderson had essentially the same yards per carry last year. So, I mean, but yeah, I agree with what you're saying about Ohio State's offense and the approach that they took tonight. And I had commented, I think, last week, maybe on the postgame pod about how I thought that Ohio State was getting away from attacking the horizontally a little bit, getting away from some of the long handoffs, as they call them, those screens out to the side. But that was what they used to really soften Wisconsin up tonight. They were getting a lot of gashes out there, getting guys the ball in space and letting them create out on the sides, out on the edges. And then, as you're saying, like attacking with Henderson and Williams up the middle. I was seeing that Wisconsin reporters were tweeting about how poorly they thought Wisconsin defenders were getting off the ball throughout this game, getting off of blocks throughout this game. And I thought that was evidence of what Ohio State's line was doing, like pushing those guys back into the second level. Really, Henderson and Williams both didn't have to work that hard to get a foot into that second level. And I thought, you know, those linebackers for Wisconsin didn't let them like get too loose a lot, but it was still a lot of like 8-9 yard chunks that Williams and Henderson both seemed to be getting. And the sticks were just moving all night with this ground game. And there was a point in the third quarter where I think the ratio was like 22-13 on runs to passes. And it started to feel a little bit like 2019 to me, where you had a defense that was kind of just shutting an opponent down, and they were content. Back then it was just J.K. Dobbins, but content to just give the ball to their running back. In this case, it's two guys, and let that be what is propelling this team down the field.
Donovan Jackson spoke on behalf of the offensive line. Donovan is a nice guy. It's sometimes hard to explain. It's like, hey, you know, you guys kind of did everything you wanted. And Donovan Jackson was very big on the like, well, we have a lot of things to clean up. And it's like, do you? Do you? But he did say, and I believe this is a direct quote, it's gratifying to move a man from point A to point B, which...
I can't wait to re-listen to that, because he's so nice. So hearing him talk violent like that, it's probably so
polite. It was very polite violence.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure he'll have a t-shirt line called Polite Violence for the NIL by the end of the week. Polite Violence, brought to you by Donovan Jackson. It is, but like that is it's basically an encapsulation of football. It's gratifying. Is it gratifying to move a man? Makes me want to move a man from point A to point B. I tried to move Melendez, didn't get anywhere. So... I thought that was I kind of want to ask Wine a Day about this next week. And we asked him these kind of things before, but there are times, Stephen, I thought it was especially true in the passing game again tonight, but in the run game, even, because it wasn't. Mayan had a really good run where he broke two tackles on a third down run, two tackles behind, short of the first down line to gain. And then went another 20 yards after that. And if he had gone down on the first hit or gone down on the second hit, it would have been fourth down. And instead it was an explosive play. That was really good. A lot of the other stuff, I didn't feel like it was grinded out run game. It was super effective run game, but it was kind of wide zone. Maybe like the holes are there. They're like, it's gashing people. But it's certainly not 3 yards in a cloud of dust. But I think it was all like the balance of the run and the pass, the way they spread them out. And I thought that, you know, the first drive, they throw basically like a bubble screen to Marvin Harrison, gets 18. They run Cade Stover down the middle, out of the slot, gets 22. And then a crossing route to Mecca Igbuka gets 33. And it's like, over here, over there, what do you do? And that set up everything they wanted to do in the run game, I think, Steven, the rest of the game. Because they spread them out, showed them what we could do to you in the passing game. And then Wisconsin was like, oh, shoot. And then they gashed him with the run. But it was, I don't want to say it's easy. Of course it's not. But, Steven, there are times when this offense is on where it absolutely looks easy. And the thing that always happens to me is I think a play went for 3 yards or 4 yards, and it went for 8 or 10. And half the time, I can't believe it, because it was the easiest 10 yards you just ever saw in your life.
Ryan Day let the passing game be a threat today. It was almost like this gun that he constantly had on safety, except a lot of times in the past, we've seen Ryan Day just start shooting the gun when he didn't have to shoot it, when the run game was doing fine. I think he didn't do that today. There was a point in the game, I even texted our testers, he had ran it 24 times, where it was pretty much the Mayan Travion show with that fullback dive to Mitch Rossi thrown in there, and they'd only thrown it 15 times. I don't know how many times in the last 2 or 3 years here where I've looked at a stat sheet and it was that significant that they were running the ball more than they were throwing the ball. Usually, if it's that much of a, you know, a just off, it's usually the other way, that they're throwing it too much and then we're all going, Ryan, why won't you run the ball? Today, to your point, he started the game off showing you I can get you this way and I can get you this way. You pick one. Wisconsin said neither. So he said, okay, we're going to hand the ball off. And then Travion and Mayan did what they needed to do in the run game. But also, yes, I've said it. I think we've all said it. Sometimes this run game can get a little stagnant because there's no diversity to it. This isn't one of those days where any of that matters because guys are simply moving their guy at the line of scrimmage.
So Wisconsin had two explosive plays in the run game, 10 or more yards, and one of them was that 75-yard touchdown against the backups. Ohio State had six in just the first two quarters.
Yeah.
So really, it was like 6-1 in important time, first half, of explosive plays in the run game.
It's just there are so many times when you watch a college football game, you watch an NFL game, and yards can be so hard to come by. You see teams work super hard for 4 yards sometimes. Three different guys make great blocks. The running back does exactly what he's supposed to do, and it's 2nd and 7. And Ohio State, I didn't realize they ran it like they were throwing it, is how, like, I would, because Nathan, like, I didn't realize there was such a disparity. I almost didn't realize they were running it that much, because they were sort of throw running it. Like, it 43 was
43 to 27 was the totals.
It was spread out. It was wide. It wasn't, because when they ran it, like when they ran it against Notre Dame on the drive that iced the game, that was like Ryan Day was like, we ran it. Oh, and everybody was like, that's what I want. And after the game, I was like, is it what you really want? I don't. But like this felt like it, Nathan, it felt wide open to me, even though they ran it more than they threw it. Am I crazy? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Kind of, it just, there's the stats and the run pass. Okay, this is the real stuff, but it felt wide open all night to me. And that's what I like about Ohio State, because wide open in space, one-on-ones, what are you going to do? You can't cover these guys. Sometimes when they get in tight and they're pounded, it's like, why are you trying? That's not really what you do best. This was a run heavy game in a way that kept it explosive and wide open. And that feels like, oh no, that could work against a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm doing some math here. It was Henderson and Williams. It was 6.9 yards a carry, but I want to take out the two touchdown runs for Mayan Williams, because they were 2 and 3 yards, and that's as many yards as he could have gotten on those. Mm-hmm. So he was like, he was capped on those. So it's 7.23 yards per carry if you take out the two Mayan Williams touchdown runs where he couldn't go any more than the 5 total yards he got there. I mean, that says a lot. Like, when you're gashing Wisconsin to that degree, Wisconsin can't win that game. Like, if you're doing that to them in the run game, you know that there are explosive plays on top of that in the pass game. They can't possibly keep up with that. That's how you're knocking a team like that off the field.
So then that is the thing that sort of what I wrote post-game was like, hey, you know, Ryan Day had gone against Jim Leonard, the Wisconsin defensive coordinator, before. Nathan, you did a good job this week sort of talking about the best defensive coordinators in a story that you wrote that Ryan Day had ever faced. And he had faced Jim Leonard 3 times before. But those games, you know, one of the games was 10-0 at the half. One of the games Ohio State was behind at the half. You know, one of the games they started with 3 punts. You know, they wound up with it like their yards per play in each of those games wound up being in the 6s. This was 8.3 when they took the starters out. It wound up being 7.7. And I thought this, again, when you have Wisconsin week, Stephen, you talk about identity. Mm-hmm. I thought this was Jim Leonard, who might be the best defensive coordinator in the Big Ten now that Mike McDonald's back in the NFL, getting the fuller dose of the Ryan Day identity, as opposed to the first three times, which was Ryan Day's first year as the offensive coordinator in 2017 in the Big Ten title game when JT Barrett was coming off the arthroscopic knee surgery. And then 2019, it's a regular season game, which was more like Chase Young dominated that game. And then the offense took a little bit while to get going. And then the Big Ten championship game where Justin was kind of hurt in 2019 and they were down at the half. This was, hey, Jim Leonard, you're good, but let me show you the Ryan Day identity, in that it was continually spread out, but then balanced within that style. And I felt, not that it's new, but I kind of thought that was about as good, maybe, again, and it slowed down a little bit in the second half. But like the Michigan State game last year, Michigan State stunk in the pass defense. It was like they were a top 10 team, but this is the second ranked defense in the country by Football Outsiders. We know Wisconsin has limitations, but this felt like, oh, this is the Ohio State offense. And I don't think Jim Leonard had ever really faced this that way before.
I think Ryan Day's got a little bit of a competitive streak and some ego there, because there might be a case that this is the most, you know, complete Ryan Day play caller experience we've seen since the Sugar Bowl, where he's like tearing Brent Venables apart.
Yeah, no, I think that might be true. Since the semifinal in 20, when they got the revenge on Clemson,
Brent Venables. Even the first half of that Michigan State game last year was.
But you just said, like, Michigan State's pass defense is already awful, and the best passing offense should be able to do that to the worst passing defense. So that you have to work in that caveat. There's no caveat of like, oh, this is the second best defense in the country by the number standpoint coming into this week. Just like with Clemson, even in 2019, before things went off the rails, Day was kind of toying with Brent Venables for a lot of that first half. They just couldn't finish drives. There is something, I think, to what it is, these, you know, more high profile, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it, defensive coordinators who can kind of get the job done. I think Day pulls out his best play calling ability.
The Rose Bowl last year was pretty good too.
Nathan,
once the defense started helping him out, yes, it was pretty good.
You asked, as we were finishing the post game, Nathan, like, how did this compare to like the 2014 Big Ten championship when Ohio State beat Wisconsin 59-0? In that game, it just felt like, hey, Ohio State has a new quarterback with a rocket arm and a high jumper receiver, and these Wisconsin corners can't cover them. And like, that's it. And Cardale's going to throw it up and they're going to have no chance. I thought like the first drive, that was not necessarily like elite individual talent by Ohio State, which when you think about Ohio State receivers versus Wisconsin DBs, even when Wisconsin is highly ranked defensively, you're probably going to see that. I felt like Ryan Day was scheming them open. It was like, oh, Cade Stover's in the slot, and now he's running down the middle of the field, and there's nobody there. Mm-hmm. Oh, looks like they're playing zone here, and now here comes a mech on a crossing route, and guess what? There's nobody near him. And that was what felt different to me, Nathan. I don't think people are surprised when an Ohio State passing game just looked more talented than a Wisconsin pass defense. But this is, hey, it's Jim Leonard. And it was like Ryan Day kind of was doing anything he wanted to do. And that was what felt a little bit different about it to me, because Ohio State out-talenting somebody in the Big Ten is nothing new.
Yeah. When I did that breakdown earlier this week, it was rare that Day had faced a guy multiple times and not put up at least one 500-yard game on him. Leonard was like the exception. Now, they came close. I think they had like a 492 in there, but all three games have been in the 400s. But it wasn't just the sheer numbers tonight. Like they had averaged, I think, 6.4 yards per play in those three games against Leonard defenses. Tonight, it was 7.7. Like, that's a pretty significant jump up. Like, they just they did what they wanted to tonight. And I think some of it is, Wisconsin's playing without some DBs. They're missing some guys, obviously. But that this was just we're starting. This was the best example we have because it's the first one. But I think it gives us a picture of what the rest of this Big Ten season could look like up until Ohio State plays Penn State, at least. Because I don't, like, we saw the results today of teams like Rutgers and Michigan State, like the next two opponents Ohio State has coming up. We could be looking at a defense that could really establish itself in these next 2 weeks.
Hey, yeah, by the way, just so you guys know, I'm not going to the Rutgers game.
Again?
The home game?
I don't want to go.
Again?
Iowa
Sports. Are you ever going to watch Rutgers play football in person again? It's no. been since 2019 since you've actually seen them.
I said what I had to say. I have nothing else to say about Rutgers. Once I write, Rutgers will never beat Ohio State. What else is there to say? What else is there to say?
I think you should do what you would do if it was a Rutgers away game. You should fly to Newark, take the train in to New York City, see a show, get some of those empanadas you like.
See a show.
write about that. Yeah. I'd say and write it in that you learned more about football watching Hello Dolly or whatever than you did actually would have if you'd watched Rutgers play football.
Hello Dolly is a great show. So anyway, this headline off the Rutgers game, I didn't go to Rutgers, Ohio State. I did this instead. : Doug Lamarese.
I'd read that. I'd read that. I actually think I'd read that.
And then it's just like 3.5 hours with me. What did I do? Did I rob a bank? Did I take a nap? Did I stage a production of Hello Dolly? We have time for me to figure that out this week.
You definitely took a nap. You definitely
Ohio State, Wisconsin coming into the game was ranked when they were tied for 12th in the nation and the fewest plays of 10 yards or more allowed this season. They had allowed 26 in three games. So basically 9 per game. And again, of course, it's a lower level of competition. I get it. 9 per game. Ohio State gained 10 yards or more, Nathan, on 10 of their first 14 plays. Yeah, and that's the thing about this. Like sometimes the stats, it's like, well, you know, kind of like we do with the Braylon Allen 75-yard run. Well, you take out this 90-yard play or you take out these two. There's nothing to take out of this Ohio State performance because they didn't have – I don't even know what their longest play was. What's their longest play? Their longest play was the 33-yard catch and run by Emeka. They didn't have a play longer than 33 yards, but they averaged 7.7 yards because, Nathan, they had constantly had plays of 10 yards or more. That, again, was the thing. Everybody, you break a tackle, you pop a run, and you're gone, right? That is not what they did. They got chunk play after chunk play after chunk play, just doing sort of like basic offensive things, which again is why I think that's more impressive than we threw up a 50-50 ball and our receiver caught it for a 70-yard touchdown.
But honestly, now if you think about it, so they've given up 26 in three games. And when you consider the two of those games were New Mexico State and Illinois State, which is an FCS program that's like not even like a great FCS program. I mean,
so but again, it's 12th. It's the 12th best in the nation, and everybody's playing
I suppose bad teams. I think that, you know, anyway, you get into conference play, and as Michigan, I think, probably found out a little bit today, as some other teams around the country are finding out when they get to play their first conference game, like it's an equalizer. And I think we learned some things about both Ohio State and Wisconsin today.
Heck of an equalizer to have in week four.
So let's touch on the running backs briefly here. Trayvon Henderson, 21 for 121, 5.8 yards per carry. Mayan Williams, 11 for 101, 9.2 yards per carry and 2 touchdowns. Dallin Hayden got some work late with the backups. Overall, 43 carries, 258 total rushing yards, 6 yards per carry. Steven, you're kind of asking about this. I think you're planning to write about this after the game. Just this, it's Trayvon and Mayan. It's sort of it like that. Trayvon wound up with twice as many carries. They kind of went to Trayvon late when the game was sort of out of reach. There was a time early when it was still kind of a game where they were really leaning on Mayan for a little bit there. But whatever this balance is, it seems to be working, and it sounds like everybody's happy.
Yeah, it's almost like Mayan had to carry a lot of the load last week because Trey was out, so they were kind of like saving Mayan at halftime and letting Trey kind of catch up on some carries. But yes, Ohio State. Outside of the 2019, J.K. Dobbins is our workhorse. We're going to give him the ball 300 times a year. It seems like they've been trying to do this two-back thing where they have two guys, you know, just sharing that load instead of having one workhorse. They had it with J.K. and Mike Weber in 2018. And then it was supposed to be Trey Sermon and Master Teague in 2020, but it was kind of weird. And then last year, they were doing a lot of different stuff. But for some reason, this time it's working. And I'm trying to get an understanding, kind of a hold on why it's working with these two and maybe not guys in the past. And some of this might just be they are the kind of they're not completely the same, but they can do a lot of the same stuff. But they use them in a way where it's like maximizes them, because we always say this with Mayan. It's like, oh, some of the stuff he gets is because he's going up against tired defensive linemen who have been dealing with offensive lines all day. Well, that works for Mayan Williams because of the way he runs. It's almost like you just got done dealing with Travion Henderson, and now you got to deal with this guy who's even more physical than he is. But then also, J.K. even admitted, like, he fought it a lot. He fought that two-back thing where even if it wasn't every other series, it's like I have to come off the field for somebody else. It doesn't feel like Mayan Williams and Travion especially, are fighting this happening. And the fact that they both see the bigger picture in a way that maybe – one, Master Teague and Trey Sermon weren't good at the same time, so they really couldn't do it in 2020. And while J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber seemed to be fighting it all of 2018.
Yeah, you're hitting the nail on the head, because 2020 wasn't a two-back system. They had two backs who neither one of them were playing all that great until Trey Sermon finally took off. They wanted one guy to step up and take the job, and they were both kind of refusing to do it for a long time. And the difference is that Travion Henderson isn't the head case that J.K. Dobbins was in 2018. I don't know what other word to use for it.
Well, I also, they seem very strategic about it because, again, trying to like read the reverse of what people are saying, Ryan Day was talked after the game about Travion Henderson's energy before the game and how much energy he brought to warmups, how much he brought to the locker room. Ryan Day felt it. And then Donovan Jackson came in after the game and said Travion had all this energy before the game, which is the kind of thing, and I'm not doubting it, but when coaches aren't winning enough games, they talk about the team's GPA. If Travion Henderson had run for 226 yards, it's like, oh, his energy is great. I don't know. But he also was karate kicking people and had 350-yard runs, right? I think people are trying to make sure that everybody's taken care of. And I'm not dismissing the idea that Travion Henderson brought energy, because I think that's probably good that Travion Henderson – he was hurt last week. He probably wanted to come back in. They did get him over 20 carries with the way they used him sort of in the second half of the game. But I think Mayan is playing very well. So I don't think Trey can be like, well, what's up with Elijah giving the ball to this guy? And it's like, well,
yeah.
Because did you see him run through those two tackles behind the first down mark? Like, Mayan's doing his job. And then Trey's like, oh, okay. But as you said, Steven, like Trey maybe came here with the idea of, oh, I'm probably going to split carries, but he just maybe thought it was going to be with Evan Pryor. So I do think, I don't think it magically happens. I don't think it always happens. I don't think it even is guaranteed to keep going from game to game. But I think right now it is working because the second guy is playing very well. And there's sort of no dispute that Mayan deserves carries here.
I think that's the difference.
And I think everybody is working together to make sure that the top guy is in a good headspace about that. And then when they like things like this are all part of that. So I do think it takes work, but I think, as you said, I think it's working.
Yeah. It's Trey already having signed up for this coming, but I do think the more important part is Mayan Williams is playing at a level where it's not obvious who the better back is, even if we know who has a higher ceiling. I think everybody knows that Travion Henderson has first round ceiling, Doak Walker, all that stuff. But it's a little easier to sell this when you take Travion off the field, the production doesn't drop. And as a matter of fact, there are times where maybe the production even gets raised because Mayan's having a better day. Well, with J.K. and Mike, no matter how much they ran, it was always clear J.K.'s better. Why is he coming off the field?
Yeah.
And if we're saying that, J.K.'s probably thinking the same thing in the back of his head. But to your point, Travion Henderson, 5.8 yards per carry today. Mayan Williams, 9.2. And as Nathan pointed out, you take away the touchdowns where it's like where he can't go any farther than 2 or 3 yards. You even raise that even more. Mayan is playing at a level where it's like, Travion looks kind of crazy complaining that Mayan Williams is getting carries.
But Nathan, Trayvon Henderson is a five-star recruit who came in as a true freshman and saved the backfield last year. And at the moment, they are not trying to tamp down a big head with him. They are trying to build him up, right? I think it is a clear thing. I think they're challenging him at times. Ryan Day, besides the energy, came out and said he ran so hard today. He ran so hard. They're trying. The stuff Kevin Wilson said about, hey, I love one-cut runners, right? I think they're working as a team to build a structure around Trayvon to bring out the best of him while understanding that the best thing for the offense right now is the two of them together, and it's all good. And I think all involved do deserve credit, probably starting with Mayan Williams for playing like a baller. But I think Kevin Wilson and Tony Alford deserves the most credit because it's his room. But then Kevin Wilson and Ryan Day and everybody talk about it. And then Trayvon for like, it seems like he's getting it. And if all that remains in place, and I'm not doubting that it will, but I'm also not guaranteeing that it will. If all that remains in place, then Nathan, then this feels like something that can be very productive this season for Ohio State.
It is interesting. The balance of the, whatever you want to call it, the mind space for those two guys, because part of it is if both of those guys are playing at the same level, that's seen as more of a positive for one guy than the other. If they're both playing at a, whatever, 87 out of 100, a 92 out of 100, then that's seen as Mayan Williams playing above expectations, above his recruiting ranking, above his abilities even potentially. Whereas with Trayvon Henderson, it's like, oh, you're only at Mayan Williams's level. And that's not really fair to anybody. But I think that is how we've even sometimes look at it. Certainly how fans, I think, sometimes look at it, because they expect certain things based on the recruiting. Like if Mayan Williams is playing at that level, okay, credit to him. But then shouldn't you be in an even higher level? So I'm still not 100% sure what we should be expecting from Trayvon Henderson at this point, but because we have seen the high end of it, but we haven't necessarily seen it consistently. So are our expectations off a little bit on him, or should we be not even thinking about it that way? Should we just be thinking about it as this is what the run game does right now? Because we're also having this whole conversation now outside of what that offensive line did, which you, Doug, were obviously referencing early in this conversation too.
I think this is a different conversation if in a playoff situation, when you're trying to get through a season and it's week four, I get it. But like, I think everybody, part of the keeping his head straight is like, they're going to need Trayvon's home running hitting ability against a Georgia or an Alabama or a USC or whoever they play in the playoff. And that's the games where it's a little bit more important that he's getting the ball 25 times. Than right now.
I'm trying to look here. How many? They did not throw it to anybody other than the main receivers tonight. Is this correct? Am I looking at this correctly? Does Trayvon Henderson not have a catch this year?
He does not.
That's correct. Yep.
So I would rectify that.
Well, I mean, no, okay. Some of that context is like, he gets like dinged up sometimes, and then we're spending a lot of time on the sidelines finding where he is. Did they take his helmet? Is he in the tent?
Well, I'm just saying, but he has, he now has four, he had 21 carries tonight, right? He had 21 carries tonight. He had 29 coming in. He has 50 carries and no receptions. I don't think that's the right balance.
That is a little weird. That's certainly not what we would have expected coming in. I was responding to a text or question, I think, this week about that, and kind of looking back at some game. And it is a little bit weird, number one, that just because his reps have been down, you know, he came out of some games earlier, only played the first series against Toledo. So that takes away some opportunities to catch passes. But I don't think that they're avoiding him necessarily. I don't think they're targeting Mayan Williams as a receiver in a way that they're not targeting him.
They're just not calling screens for the backs. I mean, like, there are times when you throw a screen to Trey, it looks like he shot out of a cannon.
I think some of that's Cade Stover too.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. I think Cade Stover's, because there's only five catches by running backs, and two of them are Dallin Hayden, three of them are Mayan Williams. I think Cade Stover is stealing the running back catches.
And one of those, one of the Williams ones was in the Notre Dame game, the famous one where he, you know, has to come back and play. And that, and that was not like written up that way for him. That was kind of like last ditch. And I think that that could have just as easily been Trayvon Henderson on that.
But they've just gotten, they just have not done the screen game at all with the backs. Right. And it's one of those things that's like, well, how come CJ Stroud's not throwing to his checkdowns? It's like because his first two reads are open all the time. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't throw a 6-yard tech check down to Trayvon Henderson. I was busy throwing a 33-yard crossing route to Emeka Egbuka. Sorry, Trey. So that's not, I'm not really talking about the check downs. I'm talking about like, hey, let's run a screen and get a blocker out in front of our slingshot running back and let him do what he does. Because I think that's one of the better things that he does. And again, Mayan has three catches. I would not be in a hurry to throw a screen to Mayan Williams. No offense. I would just give it to Mayan Williams and let him try to run somebody over between the tackles. But I would try to put that in my game plan and try to throw a screen to Trayvon Henderson at least once a game.
Well, how did we know, like, what was our best evidence that Trayvon Henderson should have been the starting running back for that team last year? It was that screen pass against Minnesota that he took off with. Yeah. And we were like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's that. We thought that was what that was going to be. And there it is. Like, yeah. So maybe give him the ball.
Yeah. So, hey, Ryan, Mr. 52 points, why don't you throw to your running backs more? Okay. When we come back, who's the guy we got to talk about? The Heisman front runner, CJ Stroud. Next on Buckeye Talk. So we're back, and CJ again, entertaining in the post game, said he has to make sure he doesn't get bored handing the ball off, which is so beautiful because it's so honest. And it's like he's not fighting it. He's just admitting it, that he knows he doesn't really want to throw it 45 times a game and run it 20. He wants them to be balanced and effective, but it's
I think he wants to throw it 45 times a game. I think he understands that you can't do that and have a sustainable offense.
I don't want to throw it because
if it was up to him, they'd throw it all 75 plays.
Well, but I don't think he would, because I think the angel on the shoulder is holding a national championship trophy, and it's rubbing the national championship trophy, and it has a halo and it has wings and it's dressed in white, and it says, CJ, look at this. You know how you get this trophy? Offensive balance, spread them out and run it. And then the devil is holding the Heisman. And the devil's like, where's your 5,000 passing yards? What's this Joe Burrow thing? What are we doing here? We got two backs, 32. We're running the ball for two. You only threw for 281 yards. What are we doing, CJ? And I think he tells the Heisman devil, CJ, to cram it. And he says, I'm with you, Angel National Championship, CJ. But then when he's with the Angel National Championship, CJ, he gets bored sometimes. That's all.
I don't know. I think he's smart enough to know that you can't hit those play action shots over the top if you never actually hand the ball off. Like, the team does have to believe that you are going to hand the ball off in order for a play action pass to work.
I mean, yeah, but he said it. He said it, Steven. He said, I get bored.
Yeah. There was a play in the second half of this game where it looked like he might have literally fallen asleep before he took the handoff, because he turned it to hand it off and there was no one there to give it to. He had to then turn around to the other side and hand it. It was a Henderson that he handed it off to.
And then Trey like jumps over a defensive line, but it's just like, what is happening here?
It was a little funky. Like he had sort of gotten a little bit bored of the idea of handing it off, to the point where he didn't know which side it was supposed to go to. So, but I don't think he finds winning boring. So,
no, he doesn't. Angel CJ doesn't find winning boring at all.
That's why I'm here, to be the voice for Devil CJ.
Yeah, maybe we could get someone to draw that for us, or we could try to craft it into a question for Tuesday, CJ. Let's say there's a devil holding a Heisman and an angel holding a national championship trophy. What would you say to both of them in the midst of a game? Because again, he only completed 17 passes. And I do think, while this is the interesting part of this, I thought this was an A game from scheme, style, balance, all that. But CJ wasn't at his best, right, Steven? I mean, he had the pick, which was basically Ryan Day trying to get a little greedy at the end of the half. He missed a couple throws, and sometimes you watch CJ and you think to yourself, well, he didn't miss a throw the whole game. I mean, he would point it out, right? He hung out, you know, Cade Stover out to dry on a couple, missed one in the end zone. He said he had two to Cade, and he was excited. We got two. I missed him on another one. He said Cade said that was his fault, but CJ thought it was his fault. So the offense was really, I think, what it should be. But it was that without him being absolutely positively at his best, which I think is kind of encouraging for the offense because he's at his best a lot. And then what?
It's only the fifth time in his career as a starter that he's had less than 20 completions in the game, to that point of only 17 completions, which is, that's actually a pretty decent amount of completions. I think what's interesting, though, is he had some wild decisions. Only one of them he actually had to pay for, but none of them felt like killed a drive. Because I remember the Nebraska game last year where he was making a lot of these decisions where he was like playing with fire. And it's like every time it would like kill the drive before it even got started. I think everything else was working so well today that he could have the, I don't know why you made that throw. I don't know why you made that decision every so often. And it didn't matter because as we mentioned with the run game, because then Maya Williams and Travion Henderson would carry it 8 yards and it'd be third and two. And they'd be right back on schedule again. So that I think that's a testament to the rest of the offense. While today was really a lot more of CJ's had some really good moments with the touchdown passes, but there were the efficiency that we're used to seeing with him wasn't there.
What'd you think of the pick, Nathan? Ryan Day said it, like Ryan Day, it was like less than a minute in the first half. Ryan Day decided to push it. He said, I should have just taken three knees and run off the field to booze. And it's like, okay. You scored 31 in the first half. Yeah, would they have booed you?
Yes. I mean, they booed him when they settled for the field goal.
What doesn't matter? Those boos.
They did. People booed when they kicked the field goal today?
Yeah.
On Saturday night, yeah. People booed?
Yeah. They boo anytime they settle for a field goal. And who cares? You won.
Yeah, I don't. He shouldn't care whether or not people are booing in that situation or not. That it's not even it should be a non-factor. But I what did I think of the pick? I thought it was a bad throw. I thought it was one of the few like chinks in the armor that we've seen with CJ Stroud this year. And listen, they kept the starters in pretty late in this game again on offense and defense. Like Ryan Day, I think, was clearly conscious of getting CJ Stroud some numbers to some extent. Although again, they were keeping the ball on the ground for a good chunk of that. But like, If you want CJ Stroud to, there's going to be other games like this. Like you almost don't expect to have to find him extra yards against Wisconsin because you know it's going to come against Rutgers and you know it's going to come against Indiana. Like you know there's going to be these other thumpings coming up down the line. So you almost like expect to blow those games up a little bit. And here you're going to just naturally get the yards by keeping him in longer, but they had to almost push it before half. I think that's almost maybe what Ryan Day was thinking, right? Like you got to push it a little bit before half to try to get him one more shot at some yardage, some points, whatever. So and they can play the blame game all they want, but I don't know if he had scored a touchdown there, then I don't think Ryan Day would have been apologizing for that. Like saying he should have come off the field, like, you know, It was his worst, one of his worst throws of the season so far. What are you gonna do?
Bad throw. And then CJ came out and said, "Yeah, I heard everything Coach Day said. I don't agree with him. It was my fault."
It wasn't exactly like it was just on the right sideline. So it was like 20% reminiscent of the last interception against Oregon last year. Yeah. But it was sort of like he just overthrew a receiver because I think there was maybe a linebacker underneath and he was trying to get a little high on. I thought he overthrew like maybe three guys today. But do you think so? Ryan Day on one shoulder is an angel holding a national championship trophy getting booed. And the angel's like, it's okay. Sometimes you get booed on the way to victory. And on the other shoulder is a devil. And the devil is getting cheered, even if the devil's kind of doing the wrong thing to get the cheers. But the devil's like, yes, the people love me. We're up 38-7 at the half instead of 31-7. And Ryan Day fight. Listen, if you don't think Ryan Day fights, Ryan Day's devil. I mean, here's the thing. I'm not 1,000% sure that CJ Stroud's devil wants to throw it every play. I think Ryan Day's devil wants to throw it every play. Yeah.
Nothing makes that Ryan Day's devil more sick than handing the ball off. Matter of fact, that devil was at its lowest point when Trey Sermon was running all over Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah. So I mean, like, they're battling it together on the way to potentially the national title game, and that's what they have to do. But the good thing is for them that in the end, the thing they do best still is chuck the ball all over the place. And by the way, CJ Stroud had 5 touchdown passes and made it look, but it was even funny, Nathan. Like, was it the last touchdown pass, the one that he zipped?
That laser? Yeah.
That it was like, I don't know if that was a devil throw. That was a devil throw. That was like, the safety is right there. Yeah. But I'm going to throw it anyway. I'm going to throw it 120 miles an hour.
Yeah, Steven, we're sitting next to each other, and Steven's like, oh, that's an NFL throw. And I'm like, he better not throw that in the NFL because it's going to get picked off by like 3 different people at the same time. Like, that's, you can do that against like whatever stiff safety Wisconsin has. You cannot do that in the NFL. That was a interesting decision made by a very talented arm.
That was one for CJ. One for CJ.
He's definitely – He had some interesting ones today,
but like still really good and not like not ridiculous, not like inexplicable. What were you thinking? I mean, what was the one? Well, it's not what they're going through. I mean, he made a lot of good throws. Like, he came out early on and was just like, here you go, this, here you go, that. Okay, we're great, we're good to go. And you know, I just think he and Ryan Day are in a really good spot. And this, in the end, and we can wrap up with this because everybody needs to go to bed. This is what Ryan Day wants, right? I mean, it's just, he's not going to run. Did he run? He's not going to run. Nobody wants him to run.
Kyle McCord ran.
Nobody wants him to run. But Ryan Day wants other people who can run. And then he wants CJ to diagnose. And then Ryan Day wants to be able to be as balanced as he feels like he needs to be in that moment. But I think he really liked keeping it spread out. And when I asked him about it after the game, he said one of those where that's the idea, right? I mean, it's sort of like anything. It's like run from throwing formations and throw from running formations. But they mostly just ran out of spread out passing formations today. Cade was out in the – Tim May was asked about it. Cade, I don't know what the breakdown – PFF will have it, what the breakdown was of Cade in the slot as opposed to inline tight end. I mean, the whole 12 personnel thing, like, that was not – this was spread it out. This was much closer to 4 receivers the whole game. And then just run out of that, but not really 4 receivers. But basically, Cade Stover is all of a sudden, honestly
– Stover is apparently Gronk, and we didn't know it.
People call – someone calls him former Gronk.
Former Gronk, yeah.
There was a farmer who caught a pass, and Farmer Gronk was his name. Oh, G-R-O-N-K. He's Farmer Gronk, though.
Yeah. Cade Stover has gone from a farmer to a linebacker to a defensive end to a tight end to a linebacker and back to a tight end, and now he might be an NFL level.
I thought you were like, this is a lead. This is like the lead of like some 9,000-word story.
It is.
Cade Stover has gone from a farmer. Yeah, from a farmer to a linebacker to a tight end to a linebacker to a tight end to a hero.
To a hero and then back to a farmer again.
That'll be, like when Cade's like 40 and he has like 4 Super Bowl rings. He's like, I just want to be a farmer, man. Leave me alone.
Him, Tommy Eichenberg, and Steel Chambers on the dairy farm in Mansfield, Ohio.
He got flipped on his head.
He did.
Looked a little dicey. Yeah. The one where he landed, he really landed in a way like it was more on his neck that he came, and Ryan Day said, I was worried about that. I'm glad he's okay. But the point is that when you split him out as a super physical linebacker at heart, his hands, the 2 things have happened. And again, like whatever doubts I've had about Mayan Williams, most of them were based on last year. I still think Trevion is more of a big play threat. But like Ryan Day said, it was during the midst of this preseason. It wasn't based on last year. He said, Mayan was a playmaker since he got here, but it was this preseason where Ryan Day was like, oh, okay. And Mayan Williams earned what is this real, 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 real role now. That Mayan Williams came a long way in August, I think. And I don't know what Cade Stover did. In March, he was a linebacker, and now he has great hands. We knew he could block. What, all spring, the number one thing we talked about was like, well, they don't have any tight ends. And now Cade Stover is like a legitimate weapon in the passing game. We figured he'd clear people out in the run game. This guy runs routes and catches passes. He doesn't drop stuff. And he is a real weapon. And to put him out in the slot the whole game, like he's Kyle Pitts, is just another evolution of that, because you can't change personnel as Wisconsin, because it's still a 250-pound guy who will block your head off if you're not careful. But now he's out in the slot. He acted like Jackson Smith Njigba tonight. It really is quite a thing for them to be able to have that personnel package, spread it out and run it. That, I think, is that is Ryan Day. The devil and the angel are square dancing together. That's what it's all about.
I wrote before the game, when I saw that Jackson Smith Njigba wasn't going to play, I kind of thought that might mean a lot of 12 personnel tonight. Because we've seen that – which game was it? I guess the Arkansas State game. I think they came out in 12 personnel when Jackson Smith Njigba didn't start, and they just had Marvin Harrison Jr. and Ibuka on the field to start that game. And I got partially, though, because Fleming still wasn't playing. So that changes them. But anyway, so I thought maybe they would come out and do the same thing again tonight. But I think it goes back to what we talked about at the very first at the start of this, that Wisconsin sees its one identity that it has to come out and try to beat you with, because that's who it is. Whereas Ohio State looks at what Wisconsin's defensive identity might be, what Wisconsin would want Ohio State to attack it with, and says, no, we're going to do the other thing. We're going to make you uncomfortable because we have so many different ways of doing this, and we're comfortable in so many different capacities here that we can maybe do the thing that isn't exactly our number one chief strength. We can approach it a different way, and it's still going to be something that is going to really frustrate you and be difficult for you to defend. And that's what they did, I thought, coming out and spreading it out the way they did.
What if we just call them Cade Stover and Njigba, CSN, JSN and CSN? It's all good to go. It's about working the middle of the field, right, Steven? That's what it's about. Whoever it is, work the middle of the field. And Jackson Smith and Njigba owns that. There was a play where Emeka tonight caught one easy kind of middle of the field and then exploded. It was like, okay, that looks familiar. But that was part of the thing last year. It's like, why didn't they throw to Rutgers? Well, because Jackson Smith and Njigba took over that entire part of the passing game. Between the hash marks, that's his area. And in his absence, Cade Stover makes a difference in that area of the field. And when you can threaten the middle, as well as deep shots down the sideline, stuff horizontal, man, it's like a tic-tac-toe board, man. Like, there's every little box you can check because you can hit him everywhere.
I think the combination of him and Emeka make up for Jackson, because they like do different parts of what made Jackson great. It's like Emeka, at least not yet, isn't like, it doesn't look like he's the lead at the whole, here's a 4-yard catch, can you turn it into a 14-yard play for me, please and thank you very much, like Jackson could. But he's a really physical receiver in there, and Jackson's a pretty physical receiver, so he takes care of that part. While because he can't do the whole take the 4-yard catch and make it a 14-yard play, that's where Cade Stover comes in as a guy who is a vertical threat at this point. I mean, they're sending him down the seam in a way that we kept pleading for them to do with Jeremy Rucker, who's probably looking at all these games and doing the Leonardo DiCaprio meme at this point. Like, why didn't you do any of that stuff for me? But it's like, if Cade Stover is handling more of the downfield process of like working the middle of the field, and you've still got that aspect of Jackson Smith Njigba's ability to route run in there that Emeka brings, then that's where the whole can Ohio State win without Jackson Smith Njigba question becomes a yes.
All right, that'll do it. Come back on, I guess, Monday it is. We'll put Ohio State in the national context. Some goofy stuff happened, man. USC barely won. Clemson barely won. Michigan got pushed pretty hard. Georgia had a goofy game with Kent State that nobody saw coming. So it was a goofy weekend at a time when Ohio State faced what is a pretty good Big Ten team, maybe even better than that. I'll be curious to see what Wisconsin does rest of the year, which will help put this in context a little bit more, right? Are they going to be? Nathan said, I think they could lose four, you know, maybe lose two more games. They're already 2-2 with the loss to Washington State thrown in here. Minnesota looks pretty good in the West. I still think I might pick Wisconsin in the West because I just think Mertz with not as much pressure might be decent and they can get Braylon Allen going. But that'll put this game in context. But at the moment, we don't want to come in and be like, oh, we think Wisconsin's pretty good. Then Ohio State drubs and be like, ah, Wisconsin stinks. This was Ohio State making Wisconsin do this. This Wisconsin defense is going to be ranked in the top 10 statistically at the end of the year. Zero doubt about that. They always are. Because they play in the Big Ten West. And now they get to go play Spencer Petras and Ryan Helinski and whatever other quarterbacks the West is throwing out there. So that's going to happen. But I also think Wisconsin will move the ball on some people. And they did not really do it against Ohio State. Thanks to you guys for listening. Read Cleveland.com/OSU. For Nathan, for Steven, I'm Doug. And that was Buckeye Talk.